Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, stream our show at nprnews.org/listen live every weekday at 9 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the show.
Good morning. I'm Carrie Miller. Good to have you listening on this week. When a new president has been inaugurated, an impeachment trial is on the agenda. And the opposition party, the Republicans, must grapple with an identity that is closely linked to Donald Trump. Which brings us to our question today. Will the Republicans who denounced Donald Trump from the beginning and never wavered from their warnings continue to be GOP pariahs? Or has the former president's behavior and incitement of a Capitol mob given them an I told you so moment and renewed influence on where the party goes next? Here's how Politico put it last month. The defeat of Donald Trump might have been the easy part for Never Trump Republicans. Next up, taking on the more elusive target of Trumpism with their boogeyman gone from office. Two guests to weigh in, your thoughts. If you were a Never Trump Republican or a Republican leading independent, how difficult will it be for the party to vanquish Trumpism? And Democrats, I'm interested in hearing from you. How willing is your party to welcome Never Trump conservatives and moderates into the fold? So if you were a Never Trump Republican, and I know we have a fair number of them in Minnesota and in the upper Midwest, or you're a Republican leaning independent, how difficult do you think it's going to be for the party to vanquish Trumpism? And Democrats, how willing is your party to welcome Never Trump conservatives and moderates into the fold? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, on Twitter, at CarrieNPR. Our guest this morning, Olivia Troy, is a former Homeland Security official. She's COVID-19 advisor to Vice President Mike Pence, and she's the current director of the Republican Accountability Project. With us from Washington, D.C., Olivia, welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Liam Donovan is with us. He's a Republican strategist and consultant, and with us from Arlington, Virginia. Liam, welcome back to the show. Good to talk to you again.
Carrie, thanks for having me back.
You know, Olivia, I think I have to ask you what job one is of the Republican Accountability Project. What's the A number one thing you are tasked with doing?
Well, I think first and foremost, we are focused on holding the congressional Republicans who lied to the American people about the election and the big lie of the election having been stolen, and who basically voted to vitiate our democracy by disrupting the Electoral College vote. So that is where our focus right now is, making sure that these people are held accountable for their actions.
And when you say accountable, I mean, usually the way we think about accountability is someone loses an election. Is that what you're talking about?
We're looking at the current situation right now going into the Senate's vote to convict. Donald Trump will certainly be watching Republicans and their actions and how they choose to vote. But going forward, really, we're focused on the primaries of 2022 and what comes in. We certainly know that the Trumpism movement will be there, and it will be there to counter some of the more principled Republicans. And it's our opinion that when in doubt, we will side with these few and rare principled Republicans that took a stand for our country, and we will do everything we can to defend them against perhaps a more MAGA movement candidate.
Okay. So, Liam, two questions on what Olivia has said. Do you agree that the first kind of exhibit A of accountability is going to be what happens when the Senate impeachment trial actually occurs?
Yeah, I think the Senate has a little bit different incentive structure than the House does. I think if you look at the House, there were 140 House Republicans out of about 200 that voted against these charges. They have a pretty good understanding of where their voters are. I think they have their eyes on the very primaries that Olivia is talking about. And I think, providing cover for those few members that were, perhaps on the right side of this issue is absolutely critical. I think taking swings at 140 Republicans is going to be tough. On the Senate side, I think it's going to be interesting because the incentives are a little bit different. You have members with six-year terms who aren't in cycle all the time raising money. You have people with statewide constituencies and not just a gerrymandered district. And so I think appeals to, a bigger picture, a longer view of where the party and where the country goes from here could bear better fruit. But I just think the incentives right now are so tough. And being tagged an ever-Trumper is one of the worst epithets you could hurl at someone right now. And so I'm just not quite sure that Republican voters are there, regardless of what the president does in the near future.
Yeah, you anticipated my other question, which is how are never Trumpers seen by the grassroots of the party? And I want to say there's a fair number of Republicans who were probably lukewarm on President Trump. Maybe they're not sorry to see him go. We also know he's got a very enthusiastic base that is going to continue. So how do you think by the voters, by the activists of the party, how never Trumpers are seen?
I think there's still a lot of resentment. And there's a lot of different flavors of how that opposition to Trump played out during those years. I think there were, there's the Lincoln Project, which is a very different style and a very different objective than people like Republican voters against Trump. Some of the different media outlets that formed, like the Bulwark and the Dispatch, there were all kinds of different approaches to how to hold President Trump to account, how to steer the party going forward. And I think it can all be conflated together in whatever your worst idea and most cynical idea of what these people are after. And I think, unfortunately, right now, your rank and file Republican just kind of puts them in a category of, a bunch of DC elites that don't get it. And I think that's what needs to change.
Yeah, Olivia, I have to ask you about that since you're in DC. Before we go to some of the calls, Do you think that's right? That label of elitism seems to fit if you're sitting out there in Minnesota or you're sitting out there in Arizona, where the Republican Party is closely linked to President Trump.
I think it's certainly fair to say that D.C. does live in a bubble. But what I will say is that with the Republican Voters Against Trump Project, they purposely focused on Americans across the United States, right? Republicans who were in these small towns or big cities, small towns, just different states, right? Who represented the traditional conservatism that existed before, prior to this Trumpism, people who were more moderate in their views, people who are more inclusive. And so I think I can see kind of the bubble perspective, but I think to call them elitist, a lot of these people gave up a lot of things. They walked away from their political firms that they had belonged to start this project because they believed that somebody needed to take a stand. And so I don't think it's fair necessarily to call it elitism when you do have some of these people who put everything on the line. Like for me personally, I'm a whistleblower, right? I sit in my own island on my own at times, who came forward, who gave up my entire career for this moment because four more years of Trump I thought would be dangerous for our country.
Let me take some calls here to Tom in Lino Lakes. Hi, Tom. What are you thinking about on this?
Good morning. What I'm thinking about is the extent to which those that are now in the majority party are open to embracing those that might have supported Trump or otherwise, supported some of the things that Trump was doing in the interest of pragmatism to try and get things done, rather than having this ongoing attitude of punishing those that might have either been a Trump fan or otherwise supported some of the policies that Trump had.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Olivia, this is really the question, right? Where do the Never Trumpers who, as you've just described, feel alienated from the party, you described as kind of being on an island, do they find some kind of common cause with Democrats? And there's a wing of the Democratic Party that is going to say, the progressive wing, we don't need their ideas. We got enough of our stuff to get done here. How do you manage that?
Well, I think we need to focus on what's right for the country, right? And I think that there are a lot more moderates out there both on the Democratic side and the Republican side, who really reside sort of in the middle right now, who are trying to do the best thing to get our country more unified and to try to start moving forward in a manner that's more constructive and healing and repairing. But in order to do that, I think, you know, I don't blame some of the more progressive Democrats who say no, never, never, you know, never to the Republicans because of what has happened firsthand that we've lived now, right, with the past 4 years of what we've seen. And so that's why I think it will be important to hold, you know, these people accountable who got us here to begin with, because I think there's, you know, you can't have unity without actually having acknowledgement of what has happened.
You know, Liam, I see a lot of headlines and a lot of discussion that there is a civil war. That's the name for it, apparently, from some Republican strategists going on inside the party. And there are some who say, yep, and the party has to have that. But that civil war may mean Republicans lose a lot of elections before they rebuild or whatever it is the party is going to do. How do you think of, do you think it is a civil war? How do you think about the sacrifice that might have to be made?
I think there's been a reorienting of the Republican coalition that has been happening in slow motion and in some cases, you know, accelerated during the Trump era. But this has been coming for years and even decades. And so I think you have this weird vestige of the sort of Reagan Party, which has been, you know, carried through the Bush era. It was blown up in a lot of ways by the Tea Party. And I think a lot of the things that came to the fore in the 2010s were papered over by opposition to President Obama and then again by winning with President Trump. And so I think there's a lot of issues that haven't been sorted out, the rising populism, the sort of demographic and socioeconomic sort that's going on between the parties. So I think there's a lot of things that have been put on the back burner for a long time, and there will have to be a reckoning at some point. And in a lot of ways, Trump is just kind of the symbolic totem for all this stuff. Because remember, you know, Trump isn't the cause of these problems. He is the manifestation of a lot of things that have been bubbling up within the party for years. The voters gave us Trump, not the other way around. And so I do think this is a collision course that's going to happen sooner or later, unless Republicans just decide to unite behind opposition to Biden. And I don't see that happening right now.
Yeah. Scott says on Twitter, Republicans are welcome in the Democratic Party. Plenty of D's want smaller government, smarter regulations, lower taxes for most people, support the right to bear arms, want states to have autonomy where it makes sense. It's a big tent party with moderates and progressives and deficit hawks and more. So, Olivia, do you see the Democratic Party, once you get to work or as you get to work on this accountability project, do you also see some kind of unifying opening with Democrats? Is that where this goes as we talk about, you know, political influence?
Yes, I do see that. Because in order to make a difference and try to steer the course for the direction of our country and do what's right, I think there needs to be a common cause of unity. And like, I'm a big proponent that we want President Biden to succeed, right? I want him to succeed. I want this administration to get the pandemic under control. I want them to move forward. And I think it's incumbent upon principled and responsible Republicans to do what's right for our country right now and stand by it.
Olivia Troy is with us this morning. She's a former Homeland Security official, and she's now the current director of the Republican Accountability Project. Liam Donovan is with us. He's a Republican strategist and consultant. We're considering, as Republicans hash out in a pretty public way and in what I think is going to be a very fractious way, what the party stands for, what the ongoing influence of Donald Trump is going to be. And what about these never-Trumpers, the Republicans who from the beginning were warning about the influence of Donald Trump? I mean, they're saying, as Politico put it last month, the defeat of Donald Trump might be the easy part. What do they do about the influence that he maintains on the party? And where do these never-Trumpers go? So I want to hear from you if you are a never-Trumper Republican or an independent, how difficult do you think it's going to be for the party to vanquish Trumpism? And we'll define that here in just a minute. And Democrats, I mean, this is a big question, I think, for Democrats. How willing is your party to welcome never-Trump conservatives and moderates into the fold? Is it worth some compromise? Is it worth some concession to get some things done? Think Biden is willing to welcome never-Trumpers? And it sounds like it, given some of the rhetoric yesterday in his speech. 651-227-6000. How comfortable are you with that? 800-242-2828 on Twitter at @CarrieNPR to Nan in Northwest Minnesota. Hi, Nan. Good to have you on the line.
Hi, thank you.
Tell me a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, I've been a Republican for 30 plus years. And really, I think these last, 4 to 6 years, maybe, I've been really seeing the tide turn with the Tea Party and very right wingers. It's been really concerning. I am moderate. And I think our voice is being lost in the party. I never called myself a never Trumper before, but I guess I am categorized with that. I've been always not impressed with Donald Trump, and I don't think he's led the party to where it should be. Letting radical groups taking over the Republican Party is not what it has stood for. And if that is the case, if that's where that's going to continue, I've already sent emails and stuff to the party saying, you know, if they can't uphold our democracy in that way, that I don't want to be part of that.
So, Nan, let me ask you this. Given what you've just said about you're in contact with Republican leaders, do you see the party wrestling with some of the questions that we're asking this morning? I mean, do you see a willingness for Republican Party leaders in Northwest Minnesota and in the Midwest to listen to your concerns as a longtime Republican? No?
No. Wow. No, I don't. They are very, I would not, I think up in our region, it's very strong Trump, and the moderates are afraid to say anything, I think, because they are just very vocal up here. So I don't feel like that the moderates are being heard, and I kind of feel like that I would prefer not being a part of that party if that's where it's going to go. And I really think our leadership in Washington right now has been a poor example. McConnell has not stepped up to, really moderate some of the Trump actions. Mitt Romney has been the one voice that has tried to get some morality in the party, and he's been shot down. It's a faint hope that at least we have maybe a few in there that are willing to maybe speak up, but we need mm-hmm. all of them to really take part in it and really turn that tide. I don't trust the Republican Party right now to be able to do that. I'm really hoping that they take hold of the impeachment trial and stand up for really democracy and making action known. So
I hear you, and I'm really glad you called. And Liam, I want to know what you hear in the way Nan's wrestling with this.
Well, I mean, I think she raises a great point. I think a lot of people are in the same position, but I think Minnesota in a lot of ways is kind of a microcosm for the party and what's happened more broadly in the country. Just a couple of years ago, you had people like John Klein and Eric Paulson in sort of the more moderate wing representing Metro Twin Cities. Now Republicans don't control those seats anymore, but they've suddenly taken on ground up in the Iron Range. They took over to Colin Peterson's district this time. Mm-hmm. Consolidated some of the more blue collar, more rural areas. And so I think that's exactly what she's grappling with, which is it's just a different party. It's a different profile of voter. And that is only accelerating right now. And so I think that reflects the challenge that the party is taking on.
You know, Olivia, it's interesting when you look at what we're examining this morning, then lay that over kind of what's happening in different states. I've been reading some interviews about what's happening in Arizona. The head of the Republican Party in Arizona is a always Trumper and is really determined to hew the party in Arizona closely to Donald Trump. And having read some analysis about this, I was looking at a former state legislator, Adam Quasman, who was talking to the Times about this and his worry about Arizona going the way of Colorado. He says, if we want Arizona to not become Colorado, we have to be laser focused on working families. And if we don't do that, we're doomed. I think Colorado is an interesting example here, given some of what Liam just said, too. I mean, it, you know, Republicans used to win some statewide offices there. Now it is purple and in some areas of the state, really, really blue. Do you worry that the division is going on within the party is really going to have effects on some of these states that are on the tipping point?
Well, there's no doubt that it will. Right? These movements are going to split votes in the party. And what you're going to see is people who are more moderate and who disagree with the extreme movements within the party, that the direction that they're going in, they're going to walk away. No one's
like
going
Nan,
to support,
right?
Sort of like, exactly. I mean, listen to Nan. Like, I feel for her because I've been there. You feel like you don't have a home, right? You're kind of trying to struggle, and you certainly don't subscribe to a lot of these ideologies and feelings. And like, what is of grave concern to me also is that what I'm watching the Arizona party and the things that they're saying, a lot of these things are not based on facts. That is actually the more concerning and I think more dangerous thing moving forward, is that I think Trump and a lot of the Trumpism movement behind him, like the Hollies of the world, are pushing these ideas that are actually just false. They're lies, and they're based on the more dangerous conspiracy movements out there. And I think that that is a very dangerous place for our country to give these people a platform. And I think that they have the support of people out there who have bought in through the likes of social media and a lot of these specifically targeted networks that are focused on pushing this platform and ideology.
Dave says on Twitter, never Trumper from day one. To start cleaning the party of Trumpism, the Senate must remove his ability to run again, then take on his greatest sycophants and neuter them. Hawley and Cruz, as Olivia just mentioned, are the most dangerous voices of Trumpism, and they need to be silenced. Sarah says, if what we're going through as a country can't unite us, we are done. So tired of the us against them. It's an endless cycle of politicians whose goals seem more to be elected than actually working for the people who elected them. To the phones to Chris in Blair, Nebraska. Chris, thanks so much for waiting. I'm curious to hear what you think.
Yeah, I know. I've been listening to this conversation, and, you know, I've been a Republican for about 30 years of my life, and I guess I'm proud to say I was a never Trumper. You know, I voted for John Kasich in 2016, but, you know, that was a kind of a losing cause. And, you know, I did drop out of the Republican Party and became a Democrat kind of reluctantly, but I just felt like I couldn't stay aligned with Republicans. And
how'd you fit in the Democratic Party, would you say?
You know, I mean, it's a broad coalition, so I mean, I'm reluctant to be there, but you know, I what concerns me is a lot of the rhetoric that comes around with police, defunding police. You know, I grew up on the Iron Range. My dad was a police officer. Mm-hmm. And it just worries me that, you know, you push away, you know, the working class person with that kind of rhetoric. And there's such a, you know, I think that just that it's just cementing those leads that, you know, the Republicans have in that class of people.
Yeah. Chris, you're bringing up something that I wanted to get to. So I'm going to go to Liam on this. Liam, it is said that that's some of what Chris is talking about, the defund the police, some of the rhetoric, the socialism that President Trump constantly talked about. was effective in seeing Democrats lose in some of these down ballot races. Do you think in the end that that's true?
I think Republicans were able to weaponize that to some effect. But of course, President Trump throughout the summer, instead of focusing on coronavirus, instead of focusing on the response there, he was focused on tweeting about law and order and really trying to make Minneapolis and Kenosha kind of the face of the Democratic Party. Of course, that was not able to attach to Joe Biden. And I think that's the key here is that, you know, it's really tough to convince people that Joe Biden, a guy that they have known for a long time, who is, you know, in the vice president's seat for 8 years, is, you know, is Ilhan Omar or is AOC or is somebody that wants to defund the police. So I think his relationships with the public service unions and that sort of thing is big. But I think that is going to be a favorite attack of Republicans going forward. To the extent that it's effective, I think it will get at some of those voters that the caller was talking about.
Liam, how would you describe what Trumpism is?
It's a tricky question, and in some ways, I think people have sought since 2015 to kind of backfill and give kind of an organizing principle to it. But at the end of the day, Trumpism was an attitude. It was, then candidate Trump tapping into a lot of grievance and resentment and frustration within the party, at the media, at politicians, at the Republican Party, and everything else was kind of his own idiosyncratic impulses about trade, about a foreign policy. It didn't necessarily make sense, and I think everything since then has been trying to backfill an intellectual philosophy when it's not really necessarily there.
Yeah. Okay. So that's what I wondered, Olivia. Is there a doctrine, or is it just, as Liam says, grievance-driven politics, and then whatever else you want to throw in there, including conspiracy theories?
And I think Liam's exactly right. I think this is more grievance-driven politics. I think this is, and I don't blame a lot of these people who feel very disenfranchised and who are trying to figure out where they fit in, right? They have been suffering, and they're economically, a lot of these people have faced huge economic disadvantages, especially right now during the pandemic. And so I think that is it. And I think the thing about Donald Trump is that he plays off of any opportunity of or weakness. And when he sees an opportunity where he thinks that he can drive a narrative forward on a topic that he can take advantage of, he will. And Liam is exactly right. That's what we saw happen last summer, where it became Blue Lives Matter, right? It was that movement, and it was law and order, but really he was pitting people against each other, right? And the Antifa narrative surfaced there. And quite honestly, Antifa was not really involved in most of these violent incidents that happened in the cities. That was not what this was about, but he took the opportunity and ran with it. And I can't tell you how heartbreaking it was to see what happened at the Capitol and watch these people in law enforcement, the good people in law enforcement, also be put in a situation by his own supporters where their lives were put at risk, and some of them lost their lives.
Olivia Troy and Liam Donovan with us this morning as we consider what the loss and departure of Donald Trump, and yet the hold that Trumpism, whatever that is, people project a lot of different things onto Trumpism, the hold that still has, obviously, on the Republican Party. Look at the way members of Congress are behaving. That's your first clue. They're concerned about losing the support of the base. And so we're talking this morning about never Trumpers, where they go, what this means for independents, and what it means for Democrats. Looking to hear from some Democrats this morning about how willing your party is to welcome never Trump conservatives and moderates into the fold. And never Trumper Republicans and independents, I really appreciate hearing your perspective on this. Like, where do you think the party is headed? What does it mean for you politically? 651-227-6000. Also want to talk about, on the other side of news, about whether you can split Trumpism away from the conspiracy theory thinking that has gripped a lot of the GOP. I mean, look who they've elected from Georgia. This QAnon-believing Marjorie Taylor Greene, How deep are the roots of QAnon in the party? Back to the conversation now. Olivia Troy is a former Homeland Security official. As she's noted, she's a whistleblower, and she is the current director of the Republican Accountability Project. And Liam Donovan is with us, a Republican strategist and consultant. And to the phones here, I want to get through as many calls as I can, some really good questions. To Alex in New Richmond. Hi, Alex. Thanks so much for waiting.
Oh, you're welcome, Carrie. Thanks for the conversation.
Sure.
My question is kind of regarding how the Trumps will react to the founding of the Patriot Party. It's the schism in the Republican Party is clear from the founding of the Patriot Party, although that seems to be by, you know, sort of not major Republican figures. So it's not clear yet if Trump or the Trumps as a group are going to hew to the Republican Party or the Patriot Party.
Yeah, whether they split off.
But the Republican Party has a choice whether they're going to continue to back disinformation as their principal political tactic rather than making significant policy initiatives. McConnell seems to finally be acknowledging how dangerous the disinformation tactic is. And that's what I'm wondering, where they will decide to go from here.
Liam, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. I think this idea of a Patriot Party or some kind of third party helmed by Trump is it kind of a political analog to the Trump TV or what have you, being, you know, trying to go after Fox News and that kind of thing, which makes for good headlines and maybe even something that he's kicking around. But I think the amount of effort, money, attention span that he doesn't seem to have to actually build out a political party that's going to compete with Republicans and Democrats, that's going to be able to raise funds, it's going to be able to get candidates on the ballot. It's just a big commitment that I don't see him necessarily having. And particularly when he wants to see, or he seems to want to set up his children for a political future, it seems like their future is most likely within the Republican Party. So I remain skeptical. But at the same time, look, Republicans can't win without these voters. And so if he chooses to be punitive and if he chooses to take a chunk out of the party one way or another by telling his people not to vote, I think that's going to hurt. But again, he's without his preferred megaphone and the cudgel he uses to instill discipline. So it's going to be interesting to see how he acts going forward without Twitter.
Yeah, you know, Olivia, I mean, this is why this is such a continued urgent question, because we're going to see the way Congress behaves. Trump might be gone, but Congress is very aware of that part of the party that Liam is talking about. And I look at the election of someone like Marjorie Taylor Greene, this QAnon spouting, you know, member of Congress who got elected from Georgia. And I think, there are some analysts who think that is indeed where the party is headed. And if that's where the party's headed, that's what Republican members of Congress are going to speak to and align with. Yeah? Olivia, are you there? Oh, we might have lost Olivia's line. Liam, will you grab onto that and we'll see if we can reconnect with Olivia?
Yeah, look, I think even before Trump, you had figures like this within the party most recently, and this is, again, something that predates Trump. Think of Steve King. There are always members that are going to be representing their districts, which might be R plus infinity when it comes to the primary being tantamount to the general. They're going to be a distraction. They're going to be a headache for leadership. They're going to be a magnet for donations and for headlines. That hasn't changed. I do think that it's created more incentives for, particularly in this social media environment, for people to tap into the market for this. But that's not the ticket for winning statewide elections. It's certainly not the ticket to being competitive as a national party. And so I think there will be room for a handful of members to make a name for themselves that way. But that's not how you climb the rungs of political power.
And yet, as you've noted, whatever transition is going to happen with the party, you can't win elections without the quadrant that responds to Marjorie Taylor Greene, the quadrant that loves Donald Trump and doesn't believe that Biden won the election. I mean, These are the kind of brass tacks assessments that Republicans have to make, right, when they think about winning elections.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And I think the threat is, particularly as you have, let's say, open seats in the Senate coming up or not open seats, but prime challenge targets, say in Georgia, again, for Raphael Warnock's seat in 2022, if a Marjorie right. Taylor Greene were to throw her hat in the ring for a statewide office. That's where you'd start to see just how unpalatable this is to a broader audience, particularly in a state that looks a lot like the country and is trending away, particularly in those metro areas.
Yeah. Call here from Mark in St. Paul. Hi, Mark. Glad you waited.
Hi there.
I'm glad you're going to ask this question.
Yeah. So are your guests concerned about their party being the party that groups like the Proud Boys and white nationalists and secessionists and the QAnon, these people who embrace these lies, are they concerned that these are the people that want to align with them? And are they willing to say, we don't want you, please don't be a part of our party?
Olivia, this is something we're going to talk about in more depth tomorrow morning at 9. I'm really curious to hear what you say.
Absolutely, we don't want them. No, we don't stand for that. We don't stand for these sort of extremist, racist undertones. I mean, we stand for integrity. We want to stand for doing what's right for the Americans that are out there. And so I say to those people, you know, please leave, actually. Good riddance. Go.
Yeah, Olivia, you say that as part of this effort to hold Republicans accountable. But I think we've noted this. 140-something House Republicans voted to deny that Joe Biden won the election legitimately, including, by the way, the leader, Kevin McCarthy. It is going to be, it's much easier to say, get out, we don't want you, than to actually do it, isn't it?
Absolutely. And that is why these Republican leaders and these elected officials need to collectively take a stand against these movements. It's not going to happen in the one-offs, I think. It's not going to happen just one individual on their own. It's going to have to be a collective, like, this is not who we want to be. And we're waiting for that. We're waiting for these Republican officials to come forward and say that.
You know, Liam, I think about the kind of conversation we're having on public radio, and I know that the messengers of we don't want you, get out, really have to be trusted conservative members of the party. It doesn't seem like we're there yet.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, going to the original point of this is an element that's always been part of the electorate. At one point, it was distributed pretty evenly across parties. And I think in the sorting that we talked about earlier, that is consolidated maybe more on the Republican side. But what's new and what's different than ever before is that you don't have, you know, if this were a George W. Bush or you know, a Romney or McCain, these were people that would, you know, have no problem saying, I don't want David Duke's support, or I don't want the support of these fringe elements. I think what's different is that Donald Trump, you know, at once refused to reject these elements and in some ways amplified them. And so that's what's going to be hard to roll back. You know, I don't quite know what it looks like. I mean, I don't think, you know, it's a Kevin McCarthy or Mitch McConnell, the leaders of the party that remain aren't out there courting this stuff actively. And, you know, the repudiation and what it looks like, I think, is an open question.
But I mean, the point has to be made that, yes, McConnell came around. I think Nan talked about how late it was. Some of our other listeners are saying, yes, we can start to see the light. But Olivia, it took him years to come around, and he kind of made the bargain with, quote unquote, the devil, because he wanted legislative accomplishments and he wanted judges. What does it mean, do you think, that now McConnell is standing up and saying the kinds of things he is? And how is that being heard by the base of the party?
Well, I think that right now, Republicans, I think we're at the moment where they have a choice. They have the opportunity to break away from Trump and this Trumpism. Now, whether they'll do that or not, I think Liam's right. I think it depends on their voting base, and do they actually believe that this is the largest voting block under them, that these groups are their main supporters and they have no other support, and in which case I think that we need to run better candidates as Republicans, right? That's exactly why this accountability project exists. It's just we're looking for change. We're looking for some sense of leadership from these individuals, especially like McConnell. Now, McConnell did come out and he said, you know, you were lied to. People needed to hear that from him, right? That was a critical mm-hmm. voice that people needed to hear. Say this out loud to these people. But actions speak louder than words. And so what comes next, McConnell?
Gina called in from Breezy Point to say, as a Democrat, I'd welcome the Never Trumpers. I think it would create more unity. If they're amenable to working with Democrats, it might inspire Congress to get some work done, maybe break the gridlock. David in St. Paul called to say the Republicans have gone so far to the right that the middle is now center right. When you look at elected officials, most of the public is closer to center left. If you look at abortion, climate change, et cetera, the middle isn't the middle anymore. Let me go back to the phones here to Aaron in Royalton. Hi, Aaron. Good to have you on the phone.
Thank you. So I think this would be a good time to get a third party, but not what you guys are all thinking about with the Republican left splitting off. I think this is a good time for the centrist people on both parties, because I've never been a party line voter, you know, and I think there's a lot of people that are interested in just kind of getting through stuff and without this extremities, and, you know, like maybe a Republican party or a yellow line party or something, you know, I mean,
yeah, I like it. I like the idea. Liam, what do you think about a Republican? Maybe you work on the term a little bit there, but you know, I think there's a fair number of Americans who would love to have another choice, you know, a third party. They are notoriously hard to organize and win elections with. So how are you thinking about that now?
Yeah, I think that's right. And it does take, I mean, it takes a unique state and electorate to pull that off. I think Minnesota is one of the places where you've seen at least some level of success with Governor Ventura and others.
Yeah.
I mean, Ross Perot, if you look at his footprint, and in some ways kind of presaged the popularity of Donald Trump and that sort of disaffected kind of radical center. But remember, a party that Ross Perot started, the Reform Party, which actually did have some energy back in the 90s, is now all but dormant. And so I think it shows you the challenge of turning what's obviously a latent market for something different into a sustainable movement, particularly in a system that is very much a duopoly. This isn't a parliamentary system. This isn't a system where, you know, having enough support that isn't majority support is going to get you any significant power. So, you know, I understand the frustration, but I think for right now, the key is to find some kind of overlap and build coalitions between the parties rather than trying to do an end around.
Yeah. Olivia, I want to ask you about legislation, because we've got a show coming on President Biden's immigration package. And I've been reading some of the things that conservatives who were never Trumpers are talking about. And Bill Kristol has been saying, hey, one of the ways for never Trumper Republicans to leverage power is to support some of President Biden's priorities, like immigration. So immediately, I know you saw this, you know, the president sends up the immigration legislation. And immediately of the Hawleys and the Rubios and the others say, basically dead on arrival. Is this a moment for legislation like that, that a lot of members of Congress would like to be able to work with, where we're really going to see the influence that Never Trumper Republicans can have? Or is it not as hopeful as that?
I think this is definitely an opportunity. You know, the issue of immigration, this is something that has been wrestled with for decades, I would say now, right?
Decades,
we have struggled
right.
with trying to figure this out. We know, you know, immigrants are definitely the backbone to the country, I believe. There's so many hardworking immigrants out there who are sort of stuck in this system that, you know, right now, unfortunately, with all the more extreme measures under the Trump administration, there's a lot of repair that has to happen in that space. But repairing that is not just it. It's just how do we, moving forward, right, taking steps to actually fix the system to figure out how we kind of like and sort of engage in this space. And so I think this would be a great opportunity for the people who are actually trying to fix things, right, to prove themselves.
Yeah. Let me get a call here from Paul in Grand Rapids. Paul, I don't have much time, but I wanted to get you in. What'd you want to say?
Well, I guess I you know, why does everybody think this is Trumpism? I'm not so sure that you should be labeling it Trumpism. I think what we're seeing in this country is the people on the Republican side that are more concerned about their rights to bear arms. They're more concerned about other policies that the Democratic Party has been touting here recently. And I think that Trump has just been a vessel. And he's been speaking with a lot of people think deep down inside and a lot of things. You know, I don't know a Trump supporter that likes Trump. You know, they don't like the man, but they're supporting him. And I think
But the frustration... Yeah, Paul, I think I hear you saying, but the frustration with the system remains even after he's gone.
Oh, yeah. I think he's more the voice of how the people are feeling. Most people don't like him. I've never met a man that liked Trump, personally.
Liam, Liam, this is a really good point from Paul. The vessel, as he puts it, might be gone. What are you going to do about the voters with this level of anger and frustration?
I think Paul's exactly right and sort of gets in a pithier way at what I was mentioning earlier, where, you know, Trumpism as such is more of the attitude and more harnessing the energy or where the energy is in the party. And that's not around policy. That's not around sort of old fashioned philosophy. It is very much about, you know, culture and perceived loss of culture and what the left is doing, and everything is geared about, well, what about this? What about that? And so Trump going away as a symbol, I think is less important than the fact that there's a market for this and somebody will step up, the supply will rise to meet the demand within the electorate. And so I think it's a point well taken and maybe a good place to finish up.
Yeah, Olivia, just a quick note here. I mean, that's what you're all about, right, with this project. Who's going to step up and who's going to support the people that step up? It's kind of unknown at the moment.
Somebody has to have their back.
Good to have you both on the show. Olivia Troy is a former Homeland Security official, COVID-19 advisor to Vice President Mike Pence, and the current director of the Republican Accountability Project. I urge you to go on and check it out, see what they've got planned. Liam Donovan is a Republican strategist and consultant. We appreciate their ideas and all the questions that you came to the phones with and that you tweeted out. Really good discussion here. News and weather coming up.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show from NPR News. If you'd like to hear more conversations like this, subscribe to our podcast. And thanks for listening.